So, Kai, we have a little time before our special guests arrive.
Yes.
Quick question, if you don't have an answer, okay. Do you have a drag queen name, or like, have you thought of one? Like, if you had to be a drag queen,
Oh,
if you were a drag
I
queen.
have one. It's not the most glamorous one, but well, there's a story behind it. My stage name, my drag name is Kiki.
Kiki, okay,
Yes.
interesting.
Kyle Kiki, but there's a story behind it. So how about you? Do you have one?
I was trying to think about this because I know you don't like when I ask you the question and I don't answer it, which is kind of in the formula here.
Yeah, but
I don't know if it's my name or the woman I would like to be.
Brianna?
No, that's too plain.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that's, again, I don't know if this is my name, but I would love to be a drag queen with the personality of, this is obscure reference, unless you're a Woody Allen fan, of Inez in Midnight in Paris.
Ooh.
I don't know. She speaks to me. You know, I've always like loved her. I had a roommate in college who, if he loved like something or a guy or a woman, he'd be like, "Oh, I live for her. I live for Inez."
Now, would you like find mine was just a name? Would you put a little adjective to it, like the Incredible Inez? The
Not the incredible, but I'd have to really think about the adjective. But maybe some more Hoff fans can tell me.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell me that. That's okay.
Iggy Pop! Hey, man! Let it rot! I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Truman Capote.
Why don't you have some fun?
Fun,
Tommy, that's a pay thing.
Whoever she is, I'm gonna find her and I'm gonna hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish!
I'm always on my mind, cool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Hi, Hoff fans. Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm Kyle Reinfried.
We're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to talk great movies. Today, we'll be chatting about a film named Flawless. We have two very special guests today.
Yes, with us, we have Ona Louise and Goldilocks. They're two local drag queens that host Drag Bingo. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having
yeah,
us.
Yeah, it's our first podcast of the show.
Really? Really?
Oh,
First
wow.
ever.
I know.
Yes.
I hope
This is
our makeup's okay.
So for our audience, why don't you introduce yourselves? Just give us a little taste of what you guys are all about.
So I'm Ona Louise, and I'm a Brooklyn drag queen. I've been doing drag for about 3 years. Goldilocks and I met about 8, 9 years ago, but we've been doing drag together for 3 years next month.
Oh yeah, anniversary.
Happy
yeah.
anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
And I'm Goldilocks. So, as Ona mentioned, we met each other before drag wasn't even part of our lives. We've always loved the drag queens. And then we got invited to host a drag bingo for charity at a local cafe, and we've been doing it ever since.
Right, yeah.
That's awesome. So, yeah, what made you go, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is, you know, like you said, you were into drag shows beforehand, but what really made you say, oh,
I feel like Ona's always wanted to be a drag queen, and she didn't want to do it by herself.
I mean, we needed an opportunity to do so, so.
Yeah, and I think I've always done, like, performing and stuff, and I was in choirs and shows all my life, so I felt like it was a nice sort of natural artistic outlet for
just
me.
Just the next step in our
yeah.
gay lifestyle.
Just who knew it was so much work? You have no idea.
Yes.
I mean, it seems like it's a process.
It's a process.
I have a little experience in it. In college, I did for a charity event. I was in a fraternity, and a sorority held an event where a guy from every fraternity had to dress in drag, and so my stage name was Kiki,
okay.
and I sang
oh.
Midnight Train Down to Georgia.
Nice.
I came in first
sync,
place.
Or
no,
did
I sang.
Oh, wow.
You
yeah.
sang?
I sang, yeah.
Oh, and then you've already one-upped us.
Oh, really? Yes, okay.
Special guest Kiki.
I was
going to
say, did
month.
You do the Gladys Knight version? But then I
yes.
realized you did Kiki's version.
Of course, yeah. Well, yeah, I did a melody of It's in His Kiss to Midnight Train in Georgia and Turn the Beat Around.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was
a medley.
Pulling
it was a,
shows.
Yeah, it was a showstopper.
I didn't know
I
that,
won $100.
You've never
I came in first place, $100 to the Olive Garden. So
wow.
Pretty big deal.
Which for, yeah, I mean, yeah, that That could go a long way.
Unlimited bread, you know, salad and breadsticks.
$5.99
for years.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there a video of this?
There is a video somewhere at my parents' house.
And you haven't
house.
Seen it?
I didn't know.
No, we were high school
know.
Friends. We didn't talk a lot during college. And then we
had a falling out.
No.
It's just a little bit more dramatic.
Yeah, it's true. Okay. I do have a picture. I'll show you.
Wow.
Maybe we'll post it for our fans.
Sure. I'm sure the fans would love it. I became a brunette for that one.
Did you shave? Were you?
I did. I shaved my face.
Was that the last time?
I was pretty much clean shaven.
Was that the last
time
you were clean shaven?
No, I shaved for like Halloween. I think back in like, I don't know, 2010 or something like that.
I think that Ona and I we let our beards grow in between our gigs.
Okay.
Just because.
Yeah.
It's too much trouble.
Oh yeah.
To go clean shaven like every day.
I only shave when right before I perform.
Yeah.
Like minutes before.
You get a better shave if you let it go.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
I
wouldn't know. Yeah,
I have experience.
Brian shaves a lot more often than
I'll
I
grow
do.
Like a beard and
he's
then I'll just
got a mustache.
Get angry. And yeah, I haven't had a mustache in a while. Did it for the 4th of July, but kept it a little longer.
Mustache is coming back, though.
Maybe not. Probably not, but whatever.
Okay.
So we first saw you two perform at Indian Road Cafe, which is a cafe in the neighborhood that I live in.
Inwood. Yes.
Inwood, Manhattan. We had a fabulous time. It was awesome.
Now, when you came, did you actually know you were going to be there for bingo? It was just sort of a happy coincidence.
No, we came purposely.
Because your girlfriend.
Yes, my girlfriend had been there before, and she had gone with her friend, and she had said it was awesome.
Oh, great.
So.
Word of mouth.
Also love Indian Road Cafe, so.
Yeah.
It was perfect. And then when we watched Flawless, we're like, this is who we have to have on.
Yeah, and
Match
we're so glad that
heaven.
You two responded right away, and we were thankful for that. And I guess, I mean, the next thing that we naturally asked our guests is, when were you first introduced to Philip Seymour Hoffman, and do you have a favorite role of his?
Oh, gosh.
I think the first PSH movie I've seen was Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, he's so good in that.
And I think that was my first introduction to him, but my favorite role is when he plays the cameraman in Boogie Nights.
Oh yeah.
With like the long stringy hair, and he's in love with Mark Wahlberg. It's pretty.
Oh
good.
Yeah, it's so good. No, I feel like that was the first time that I really noticed him.
Yeah,
was in Boogie Nights, and I saw Boogie Nights in the theater, and I love that movie. Like I love the styling and how they go through like different eras and
that's a big thing that people don't really give to that film is that it's 70s and 80s.
No,
and,
I felt like the styling and the music and the sets and the everything was just so great that it like went through like two different generations. It was pretty cool. So
yeah. Scotty
but I actually don't know too much about him otherwise. Like I didn't and sometimes I was saying before I didn't realize I knew I had seen so many films with him because I should notice him more.
Right.
And of course, now I will.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
go back
that,
and watch everything and be like.
If you read his IMDb, you're like, oh
yeah. Yeah, that's what
and
it
you
was.
You see the picture from set and you're like, oh, okay. Because, I mean, he plays. This is a big. This movie, Flawless, he is a, you know, co-leading actor. And for us, you know, going from the beginning, this is his biggest role to date.
So far, yeah. It's the most screen time he's had.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
At the beginning, I mean, we had, like, issues just finding clips or his one scene, and now, I mean, he's in the whole film pretty much.
Yeah, we're
going to
be playing plenty of clips for you, Hoffman.
Oh, good.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
So, had either of you two seen Flawless before?
I saw Flawless. I forgot where or why or when or when I saw it, but I saw it about over a year ago.
Oh, so recently.
Yeah,
and I didn't even know it existed.
I thought it was
to be
so
honest with.
Strange,
and I'm shocked that I've never seen it because when you see the subject matter, you're like, "Oh my!"
And you're
God.
Reading the synopsis, and you're like, "What?
Why
like,
haven't we
like,
seen this
Robert
before?"
Robert De Niro, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Drag Queen New York.
Pretty
nice.
Random. Yeah, it's kind of like Tootsie. But then you realize Philip Seymour Hoffman is the drag queen, and you're like, "Ah, it all makes sense."
It would have been way different if it was the opposite.
So the first time I actually saw it was today.
Oh, okay,
in preparation for today's podcast.
Yes.
And Kyle, you'd seen it, I know, because...
Yeah, I mean, it's just a movie that plays on, you know, HBO Stars, whatever, one of those channels frequently, and I had seen it, and it was just such a, you know, I read into it, like, right away, because it's such a, I mean, I think, just like a visceral and like brave performance by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
It's very different to what we've seen, definitely. I hadn't seen it, but I know when we started doing the podcast, this was a movie that you had mentioned to me, and I was like, oh, I didn't know he played that role.
Yeah, he's amazing in this role. And it's just like, it's one of those things that this is directed by Joel Schumacher.
Yeah, and why do I know that name?
Joel Schumacher, I mean, he had a great, like, earlier career. He directed St. Elmo's Fire, The Lost Boys, Flatliners, Falling Down. But then, I mean, some people really like this movie, but Batman Forever. But then he directed Batman and Robin, the infamous nipple suit.
Just
after that, and then he had another, like, one after that, a good movie, A Time to Kill, which has, like, a phenomenal cast. Matthew McConaughey, Chris Cooper.
But, I see that name, and I was like, like, Schumacher.
Yeah, and then this is honestly like his like last decent film in my opinion, because then he goes on and does, I don't know, some not too great movies afterwards. Although he has supposedly directed a few episodes of House of Cards, so.
He's moved to TV, but he's kind of older now, I think.
Oh, he's like 77 years old,
so he's kind of slowed down a bit. So, it seems like you liked the film, Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, I'd seen it before, and I mean, I really like the performance in this film. It's not a flawless movie.
No.
True.
I still don't know how I feel about this film.
And you had not seen
I had not seen it.
We had watched clips, you know, when we were, like...
I'll be honest with you, I was more interested in, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman's role and, like, that storyline than the weird, like, crime thing.
Yeah, so this is, like, a crime drama comedy. It's a really...
There's a lot going on. I do agree that I feel like his performance and his relationship with the Robert De Niro character is probably like the best part of the movie, and the rest of it could go away.
Yeah, there's a couple useless characters in this movie.
Yeah,
this
I mean, some of them are fun. We were happy to see some... There were recognizable drag queens.
Oh, really?
Sort of famous within...
A lot of famous... older New York queens.
Like icons in the community. So
because we were like, oh my god, like that's Joey Harris, that's Jackie B.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. So if you look them up, actually, they some of them still have a career. Like Jackie B is still performing.
Oh, great.
That's now. So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they definitely took advantage of the local.
Yeah.
Very cool New York drag queens, which is cool.
Yeah, that's one thing. This is a return to kind of his like New York films, and
Where is this place? I mean, I know New York, obviously.
But it's like East Village,
Alphabet City. Yeah, Avenue A.
Yeah, very different Alphabet City, obviously. Yeah, like the late 90s.
Cool. Yeah. But I felt like it was like super stylized and very... It almost reminded me of David Lynch a little bit. Like some of the lighting.
That's a bigger compliment than this movie.
Yeah. Just the lighting.
Yeah,
it's inspired very, it's colorful. By...
Yeah, well, again...
No, I'm not saying...
No, he did get that way with some of his films. Again, like the Batmans, like they... took a big turn from Tim Burton's, which were very, you know, like,
cartoon.
Dark. And,
right.
You know, like, and then he brought a lot of, Shoemaker brought a lot of neons and stuff like that to the Batman franchise.
Color-wise.
Yeah.
The lighting was really good. And, I don't know, I really liked the set design was really fun. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, Philip's apartment yeah, was amazing.
We like the apartment.
Like, yeah, I love the juxtaposition between... I mean, that's how, like, the movie starts off in just, like, a great way... of showing them like both getting ready and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But
I was like the Guido hyper masculine versus the drag queen hyper feminine.
So this film gets 43% on Rotten Tomatoes. So.
Oh no.
43%.
Yeah, not very favorable.
No,
reviews.
But there's other ratings that are a little better.
Yeah, it's a very up and down thing. This is not like one of those where like everyone hit it at 43. Yeah. Loved it, some people who hated it.
Yeah, I'd love to see, like, a better scale chart out there, because, again, like, I don't know how much, just watching TV for any trailer, like, of a movie, and they're, you know, it's coming onto theaters, now the big thing they're showing is, like, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. Rotten Tomatoes has become this really big, and it's just too much
I
think, like, I go into a movie, I read a lot, and I will watch a lot about like a movie before I go in. I know some people that don't watch. Joey actually Lewandowski, who does, you know, it's the godfather of the Cage Club Network. He does not watch a single trailer, anything before a movie. He goes in cold turkey. Like he shows up to a movie at the movie theater after, you know, like the trailers are playing.
Such willpower.
Yes, exactly. Oh yeah, no, I can't handle that.
Commitment.
But point being, I still go in with a pretty open mind. The only things that like I'll post judgment on is if it's a filmmaker that I haven't liked their previous work or something like that. But this is definitely, this film is, it's Robert De Niro, it's Philip Seymour Hoffman. That's the reason you stay with this film.
Right.
Well, yeah, the critics said the performances, for the most part, were good, and that's what kept them here.
Yeah.
But that some of the plots were cliche, and some of the points, and I could see that. I definitely know where they're coming from.
Yeah, and some of the acting, like secondary
Some of the secondary characters were, yeah, I agree with that.
I was like watching, I looked it up, and I was like, nope, they weren't anything else. I'm not surprised.
Now, this is Philip Seymour Hoffman's first major award nomination.
Yeah, really? For the SAG.
A SAG award.
Yeah.
So, I mean, kudos to him.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I remember I read that Meryl Streep saw this movie, and that she was just like, that was such a brave performance by, like, who's this young actor? And then they eventually worked together in the movie Doubt.
Right.
Which they both got.
That's interesting.
Both got nominated
for
that. Yeah,
many years later.
Yeah, many years later. But still, that's just.
I could see
awesome.
Meryl doing that. I'm sure she
was probably pissed she couldn't play the drag queen.
Yeah. She's like, if it's not me, it might as well be him.
So, Kyle, before we forget, summarize this film for us in your classic Kyle
synopsis.
Way.
Well, Walt, played by Robert De Niro, is a retired security guard that suffers a stroke when trying to rush to gunfire in his apartment building. His gay drag queen neighbor, Rusty, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, who Walt has a very heated homophobic relationship with, decides to help Walt learn to speak again through the practice of singing. Now, I kept that synopsis very simple because that's, again, I think we can all agree, that's the movie that we like. But there's this whole weird crime. The movie starts out with this crime, which, I mean, a movie, if it was handled a little bit better, I think that could be interesting, but it's just kind of, they got, I think, lazy with their casting. I mean, the bad guy's name is Mr. Z. Like, what is this? Like, I like my crime movies. I'm a big Scorsese guy, Tarantino, but the crime element of this movie is very lazy.
Yeah. I just didn't care about the crime.
Yeah.
So much.
I was very disjointed. I was like, I don't know. I guess they were trying to pull something all together and make it all twist
they
up.
They needed some type of catalyst and
it couldn't have just been the two of them.
Getting along.
I guess there had to be a reason why he got shot, and I guess that was the crime situation.
Yeah, I mean, well, in the beginning, he just even has the stroke. He's running up the steps, and he just...
Oh, right,
it
he didn't
gets
actually
very,
get shot.
The camera work in this movie is a little weird.
Wonky.
Like, it gets very, like, the shutter speed is very
the
fluttery.
Yeah, especially the stair scene.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to induce, at first, is this a panic attack? But then even when a cop is interrogating him in the hospital, he says heart attack, and the doctor says, no, it was a stroke.
That was a very bad scene, actually. Yes. I hated that scene.
But, yeah, it was just, I mean, it starts off with this person that steals this, I guess, drug money, mob money, whatever you want to call it. And there's this chase and they get away. But then, like I said, we get to meet our two lead actors. And I just really enjoyed that juxtaposition of seeing them both, like, getting ready for their night out.
Yeah, so, as you mentioned, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Robert De Niro, just like to do a run through of the cast. Not a big cast here.
No, those were like the only two. I wrote down one other name and it was like he's in Days Confused and then later on he's in Argo and his name is Rory Cochrane and he's
okay,
a very useless character in this movie. He's the one that plays the guitar and he's always crying over
it. Oh, yeah. No, I just thought that was like comic relief or something because like he had the same song. It was terrible.
Yeah.
Well, Wilson Germain Heredia from Rent.
Oh, okay.
Because in this, he's Cha-Cha, I think?
That's who it is.
And someone else from Rent, from the play Rent, not the film, Daphne Rubin Vega.
That's the one that that Robert De Niro won't dance with in the beginning.
At the beginning,
but then
and then
brings her flowers. She does look, she was like Mimi or something.
Yeah, she's the original
Mimi.
And then she's replaced in the movie.
Rosario Dawson plays like her in the movie
but the
version,
not a good one.
So this casting director is obviously really gay or just loves Broadway and drag queens.
I believe Joel Schumacher is gay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would make a lot of sense.
He wrote it and directed it. It's funny because Rent kind of takes place in the same neighborhood.
Oh. It does.
So it's funny that they got these two people from the play
Rent. This is before the Avengers. This is universe building.
Yeah, it's in the same universe as Rent, I'm sure. Our characters meet.
Yeah, I mean, well, they have their little interaction of yelling at one another.
Oh, yeah, so they kind of know each other in this.
Oh, yeah, they've had many feuted, you know, like, I mean, that's why I wrote in the synopsis. He's a big homophobe in
Yeah, and they're like practicing singing, which is funny because drag queens, I don't know them to sing. And then they lip sync to their own recording.
It's strange. That, so Philip Seymour Hoffman said it's a piano playing singing drag queen, and then the drag queen friends lip sync Philip singing. It's just bizarre. I would love to see that show.
Yeah, but that was really unique. I'm like, I don't know where that came from. Ona was like, is this what drag queens were like in the 90s in New York? And I was like, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, we get to see, and his stage name is Busty Rusty. Mm-hmm. First of all, thoughts on the name?
Busty Rusty.
That's not...
A busted rusty girl, I don't know.
I don't know, just using... Her real name, and her drag name is kind of funny. It's not a great. Not that we have the most amazing names ever, but I feel like
I like them much more than
we've Busty evolved.
Rusty.
Yeah,
yeah. But so they're, we see him. Walt is out, so it's Walt is De Niro and Rusty is Philip Seymour Hoffman. Walt is out dancing, and I was very confused by this. So what is this like? What did you guys think? Is this
well,
like...
that I knew what that was.
Oh, yeah,
actually, we
the,
were like
the taxi dancing.
Yeah, it's
club.
Like Private Eyes. It's like a gentleman's club.
Oh,
they still have. There's still one.
It might Private called... Eyes. That's like right in Midtown.
Yeah. I actually think it was Private Eyes or something like Private Eyes because there's.
I mean, I've been to strip clubs before.
But yeah, no, this that's is like...
Did you ever see Tina Turner's music video?
Like Private Dancer.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's what it is.
Hmm.
It's like, they're
so
not
you
really...
Go
I'm your private dancer. A dancer for money.
It's almost like the Hustler Club, but on a smaller version.
I see.
And I think you're a member of the club.
But now, when he has, you know, like...
Oh, that's interesting.
When he ends up going, he says no to the one woman that we said was she was in Rent later on.
Yeah.
Or earlier on, but and then he dances or with the one woman, and then they go to bed together.
That's yeah, we talked about that. I think it seemed to me like he was actually in love with her and dating, kind of dating her, but she didn't
see
reciprocate
like
it.
No,
in that way,
she's a working girl. It's a transaction,
right? But the other one, the Mimi,
yeah,
actually was more interested and wasn't trying to use him for his money.
Rusty has this great line later on that says, with romance, there's always finance. And so
right.
I guess that goes into both of their worlds and their relationships.
Yeah.
But, so at the same time that De Niro is at this, let's just call it the Private Eyes Club,
sure.
We've got Rusty doing his show. And I mean, let's play the
let's
clip.
Let's play the clip. Yeah.
Comfy? You too comfy? Well, welcome everybody. You all look fabulous. You look fucking great. Yeah, except for this table over here. He's from Brooklyn here. Any guys from Brooklyn? Oh, hey, sweetie. You guys like girls and big fat asses, big old tits, right? Yeah. Why don't you come up here? No, honey, you gotta stand right there. So don't come any closer. Guys like you beat my ass once I leave the club. You know what I'm saying? You love me when I'm here, and the minute I leave, you beat the shit out of me. All right. Now, get your fucking hand off my shoulder. Oh my God, are you gay?
A little bit.
Only a little bit. And I'm a little bit of a girl, too. Just a little bit. I'm all woman. All right. I want you to bend over now. I want you to kiss my ass. Kiss my ass. Think of me as a present, and it's Christmas. All right. Have a seat.
Look at you. Jesus Christ.
All right, honey. I'm going to invite my first big old member on the stage. And she's wonderful. All right. Amazing Grace. Thank you.
Okay. So, I mean, right off the bat, his pageantry, his voice, the way he's doing.
I just think he's great. I love the way he holds the microphone. I don't know why it's so awkward to me, but I think it's very funny.
And, I feel like that's very real. If I
went
to a drag show, him pulling the guy on stage and asking inappropriate questions.
I think it's totally believable. I mean, I would say this looks like it was just filmed at a bar in the 90s.
So he's a convincing drag queen to you?
I think yeah, for the 90s, he look he seems pretty real. Now it's all about looking like a Kardashian is very in style.
Yeah,
gotcha. But I think that's...
at the time, I think it's pretty classic drag queen. I think they captured like the essence of like the gay sort of, and the drag scene in the '90s in New York.
The only
glad to hear that.
Thing yeah. is like when he's not performing, and then when he's in his apartment teaching. Not performing, there's not much of a, like a personality difference.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like a drag persona personality. It's the same.
I see. Okay.
Which is interesting.
Which is
to
pretty
me.
Draggy. Actually.
Which is pretty draggy, I guess, too.
Yeah.
And it's he also makes or she also talks about making fun of like domestic violence when also she is a victim of getting beat by her boyfriend. She's like, oh, guys like you love me in the club and, you know, go home and beat me. And she actually also gets...
is in that situation.
Yeah, and she's making fun of it, which is interesting. I don't know.
But then the part that we stopped at where...
it's...
Amazing Grace is lip-syncing to a man.
Amazing Grace is lip-syncing to Philip Seymour Hoffman...
singing live.
Singing live.
Oh.
Did you realize
on
that?
The piano?
No, I did not.
No, we did.
That's...
because I was like, this is a
Cher
song.
Cher's half-breed, right?
Right. And Philip Seymour Hoffman is playing the piano, and he's singing into a microphone, and then this drag queen is lip-syncing to what Rusty
yeah, I didn't
is
catch
singing.
That.
It's weird.
But then at the end, then they all sing Lady Marmalade
together,
right?
Yes. I guess that's why they're practicing it.
Yeah, that's why, because...
in the beginning, in the window.
Yeah. That right. is a weird concept for a show.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's a whole the big thing with Rusty. We'll learn in the later clip that we play. But, you know, he's very much about performing.
Right.
And not, you know, and not just...
which doesn't make... I'm not sure if that was part of the drag scene. I think that might be unique to this movie.
I mean, they sold out that club in this movie, so I guess
yeah.
that's their shtick.
There are singing drag queens, and there always have been.
Mm-hmm.
And but, yeah, and it's a thing, so...
yeah, I mean, at least I'm happy that you don't think he was terrible, you know?
No, I think it was campy and funny and sort of amateur-y.
It's pretty hard to mess up being a drag queen because most of them are over-the-top crazy misogynist anyway.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's pretty easy to...
yeah, and then like the performer drag queens don't always necessarily have to be the most like...
glam.
Flawless look. Not to be a punny. Get it?
No. I mean, this movie mentions or says the title Flawless like 7 times.
Yeah.
Well, the pageant...
the pageant's called Miss Flawless or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Rusty says it a couple times, too.
Yes.
It's like, we get it.
It's a theme.
That's the 90s, though.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, with Philip Seymour Hoffman in this movie, with Rusty, Rusty wants to get a sex change operation because he says that he was born, you know...
yeah, he's transgender.
Yes.
Right.
I do think... there's two things. I think Goldie and I had different... viewpoints on that situation.
It was hard to tell.
It was hard to tell. My takeaway was, well, first of all, I thought it was a little overplayed, like, oh, I'm a man trapped in a woman's... I'm a woman trapped in a man's body. I think that's really overplayed and sort of like a stereotype of transgendered people. I think it's very much like a... some people do feel that way, but it's just like an over...
not in 1999.
Yeah,
I was
going to
say, this is a very...
no, in 99, I don't think anybody talked about
it. Is it fair to call this
about
a progressive
it.
Film? Is that fair to...
I would think so.
I mean, he talks about his friends dying of AIDS, and they do a lot of... you know, there's junkies doing meth. Like, it's pretty raw.
Yeah.
It's a melting pot, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that actually the movie, although poorly done, was actually... I think that Rusty didn't really want to be a woman, that she was going to become a woman, because she alludes to, like, my relationship with my married boyfriend will get better once I'm a full woman.
Yes.
Something like that. And I don't actually think she is transgender. Mm, I think she's actually a drag queen.
Oh.
And that, okay. like, she was just doing it for the boyfriend.
So this is all... if we didn't have this crime
if you had to
element
analyze.
In this movie. Yeah, but that's...
yeah,
no, that's
like,
really...
can we explore that more?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
No, because then I feel like at the end... it's clear that, yeah, I don't know, I feel like...
no, I mean, like, regardless if she felt that way or not, she definitely wanted to get this...
it was a plan.
She definitely
yes.
wanted to get the surgery,
yeah,
regardless.
Whatever her motivation was.
Okay.
And I guess that's, like, pretty... in 99, I would imagine, like, really taboo for for that to be in a movie.
Oh, yeah.
Drag queens, and because all the movies that I've seen take place in those time periods, but were made a lot more recently.
Right.
Yeah, this movie, it didn't do well. Like, I mean, again, Rotten Tomatoes is a recent thing, so I don't know exactly how it was reviewed at the time, but...
No, it takes the reviews from...
It takes the reviews
from... At the time, yeah. Okay. I agree.
But it only made, like, a third of its money. It was, like, a $15 million budget.
Yeah, it wasn't supposed to be... I know that's a lot, but it wasn't supposed to be, like, a big film. I think this Joel Schumacher probably saw this as, like, an artistic film.
Sure, this is, yes. Like, his passion project.
Hence the lighting.
It does seem very small. It doesn't seem like it's meant for people on the big screen for all of America to watch, for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's definitely the case.
But I think if it came out today on Netflix as a miniseries, it would be, like, amazing.
It'd be, like, revered as,
it
like
needs
a...
to be, like, stretched out over
so
10 episodes,
like,
or
culty
something.
And kind of campy.
Interesting.
And there's so many sub-characters that... You could
really develop
season.
Something,
just in the neighborhood, even the building. So I mean, the two of them, they live in this. It's a hotel/apartment building. Right? That's like what it's on the outside,
which is also kind of was common, I guess, in New York in the 90s. Like even the Chelsea Hotel, you could like rent by the week, or you could rent by the month,
or by the hour,
or by the hour, right? And there was a few of those. That was sort of part of like the New York scene.
You definitely see that more in movies. You know, then, like, I mean, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, De Niro did that in, like, Taxi Driver.
Oh, true. Right. That's pretty cool. Yeah, that's definitely an interesting take.
Yeah.
I would love to actually see that as a
movie. Yeah, well,
like,
you know, we were just
series.
Saying, like, he saw, like, Sordid Lives in my queue. Have you ever seen that movie,
Sordid Lives?
Sordid Lives.
No.
Yes, it's with Rue McClanahan and Olivia Newton.
Wow.
John and...
I love Olivia Newton-John.
Caroline Ray... Oh, no, Delta Burke is in the movie.
Delta Burke.
And what's favorites. Her name? I can't remember her name, who plays the aunt. But there's, like, a bunch of people. And then they turned it into a miniseries that didn't last on Logo, unfortunately. But it was funny because it's a really random movie about white trash people who, like, and whatever. But it's a very funny, kind of weird, bad movie that sort of has a cult following in the gay community.
Interesting.
And so they tried to turn it into a series, and actually the series was working really well. It just didn't get picked up again.
Gotcha. I love Olivia Newton-John's magic. That's like a...
Oh, yeah, you should watch it. She plays a country-singing lesbian who's recently gotten out of jail.
Oh, my God.
Well, then.
So
my life.
We gotta watch
that. If that doesn't entice you, nothing will.
Yeah, and it's on Netflix?
I don't know where it is.
Okay.
I'm sure
we'll find it.
We've tracked down.
You can find the movie. It's hard to find the series.
Okay.
But go for it.
Great. Yeah. So, I mean, after this scene we've been discussing of seeing Rusty perform, this is when, I guess, the catalyst of the movie, right, we'll call it, that the mob shows up. I don't know what you want to call these guys, gangsters, thugs.
The bad guys.
The bad guys.
Yeah.
They show up to... get this money because the concierge, the manager of this place...
Oh, yeah, that was weird, too.
Yeah.
That like was another weird side plot, like...
Yeah.
He was intimidating him, and
He was not a good actor.
Yeah, and it was kind of a weird, like...
Leonard was his name.
Are they having sex? I don't know what's going on.
Nothing was adding up.
Yeah.
No, I still haven't been able to...
It was a weird, like, nerdy Jewish concierge...
Yeah, his scene later on with this whole mother thing was very...
And the teeth, the dentures, so that was like, what? Yeah, that's when I was like, why does this have to be in here?
Yeah, but this is when there's gunfire, some people are killed, and Walt goes upstairs and he has his stroke, and, I mean, Walt is in the hospital, but he's being stubborn and... goes back home, and he's contemplating, he has a gun to his mouth, he's contemplating suicide.
Yeah, depressed.
Yeah.
He tries to break open his pill bottle
with
the
Old
Spice.
So sad.
Oh, yeah. That shows you how great of an actor Robert De Niro is,
because he did a lot
with a little.
I was going to say, what did everyone think about Robert De Niro's performance?
I thought he was amazing.
Yeah.
He had the most...
I mean, it was a challenge. It was actually a pretty hard role.
I mean, he did do that, like,
mouth
thing. Just that mouth, like,
the locked
stroke face.
Stroke.
I just thought he was really genuine. And I actually was like, oh, he was pretty convincing being this person.
And the character
who was sort of homophobic
layered.
And then sort of came around to it.
And the progression of his character's like journey.
Yeah, it was super believable. Like I thought he was great.
He was really looking there was very little trivia. I tend to like say, you know, some trivia on the episodes, and one of the things was that Joel Schumacher had a friend that learned to speak again through singing, so they had a very personal experience with that and wanted to make that end of this movie. And then Robert De Niro only had one question when he read the script, is when do we start? And then Philip Seymour Hoffman, a big thing he said was that he considered De Niro, and he's acted with some pretty, you know, big names, so from Burt Reynolds, Paul Newman, and he said that De Niro was the most imposing actor that he had worked with. And I mean,
yeah, apparently they like a lot of that, like the singing stuff was improvised.
Yeah,
they have that outtake
well, even
at the
like,
end.
When you watch the
so
credits,
funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, they play the name game. In character.
I know, and it was like it all
and
folk
they go
could
into
do
the
to
words.
Like not laugh.
Yeah. I remember being a little kid and like rhyming to Chuck and ending. With,
yeah.
You know,
like,
you know it's coming.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's actually cool.
And he's like, let's do pussy now. And I was like, and they looked like they were having like a great time. They had like really good chemistry.
I don't believe they never worked again.
No, I don't think so.
That's why I love this film for that reason alone. They're just, I mean...
Well, again, their relationship is the heart of this entire film, and I know that's obvious, but just there's so much crap around it.
But wasn't Robin De Niro a bigger actor at the time?
Oh, yeah, much bigger.
Yeah, he came... So this is, again, 1999.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, this is when he starts... playing a little bit more like his stereotype, you know, Italian American himself, but this role itself is challenging because he becomes disabled for a majority of it. You know, what would you say? Only like a few.
He doesn't even end like perfect.
No,
he gets shot and taken away. You're like, okay, did he die? Like,
but
so he's basically just himself. Like, when I say himself, like a healthy guy essentially. What, for 20 minutes of the film? 15 minutes of the film?
Yeah, 15 minutes of the film at most.
The rest of the time he's...
Yeah, I also read that... Did you see that? That it took him, like, days to get out of that?
Yeah, he would get the locked jaw and, like...
Oh, yeah, I was saying, like, how many hours was he in that position?
Because
I can't be healthy.
Girl.
Yeah.
I know some actors, like, to go to a film that Philip Seymour Hoffman is later on, and I'm sure I'll say this again when we do the episode, but in The Master, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but
yes.
Joaquin Phoenix talks very, you know, just like has a voice, and he actually had braces put in to
Jeez.
Keep the right,
really?
Yeah, to keep like the right side of his mouth, or you know, one or the
Did
other
Did you see
side.
That movie?
I have not.
That's
a very...
too extreme.
but point being, so that like, I know he had...
It's physically like...
Yeah, but that's, I mean, De Niro is... known
committed.
To be a very method actor. He, in between Godfather movies is when he found out he was going to be, or in between Godfather 2, which he was in, and whatever movie he was in after that, he found out he was going to be a Taxi Driver, and he would fly back from Italy, and he became a taxi driver up in, like, the Bronx, and, like, you know, Harlem and everything like that. Yeah, in the 70s, and picked up, like, he carried a gun with him just in case.
He lived that movie.
Yeah.
For real.
So he's a very method
immersive
actor. And you see, and so you just see it in this performance, which is
yeah, and that's something we're just gonna, you know, just continue to focus on their relationship, because I mean the crime elements again are just not interesting to me.
I don't think they're interesting
it's
to
anybody. Just Robert De Niro's character is so layered because he's struggling with all these things about masculinity. He was this war hero who's now shot, so he's useless, he doesn't want to be seen knocked down.
All right, and then he also has like of relationship issues, clearly.
Yeah, then he's like lying to Philip about, oh, I don't pay for sex, when clearly he goes to Private Eyes and
yeah.
pays for sex.
Yeah. But he's in love with the person he pays.
And, yeah.
It's funny, because they think they're so different, and it's kind of like an obvious trope, but they both have, like, body issues. They both have these, like, dysfunctional relationships.
Yeah, I don't want to oversimplify, but one of the things I wrote down early on that I wrote, they're two lonely people with a lot of baggage.
Yeah,
and
people's perception
of
them are a little bit skewed.
Oh,
of
absolutely.
Course, yeah. And the big thing that they always say to one another is like, "Don't feel sorry, you know, for yourself." But
mm-hmm.
They end up realizing they kind of need one another. I mean, mm-hmm. heck, at the end they accept one another as like brother and sister. So, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I like the line where Robert's like, you can take a dick, but you can't take a joke.
Oh, yeah, an insult, right.
Or an insult.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, now who's Mr. Sensitive?
Yeah, there's definitely some crazy lines in this. Joel Schumacher wrote and
directed
this.
There is some really good lines.
But I feel like I heard a lot of those, like, drag queen-y responses, like, oh, yeah. Life's a bitch, so I became one.
Yeah.
Well, that we heard, but not...
Lives
on Won't Street.
Yeah, I have that right here.
Can't lives on Won't Street.
Oh, I like that one, yeah.
Some of those lines, I'm like, yes, that's so good. And I was like, that's original. Like, I've never heard that before.
Yeah, even with the one with Cha-Cha, when they come in, when his drag friends come in, he's like, yoo-hoo, Miss Taco Bell. Like,
yeah, yeah. That's very funny.
There's a great line in this movie that was actually, it's towards the end of the film, that was reused from this movie Car Wash, that this one drag character says, I'm more man than you'll ever be and more woman than you'll ever get. And that's a line from this movie Car Wash, but Rusty ends up saying it, you know, later on in the film.
Yeah, when they're fighting.
Yeah.
It's also in Rent, too.
Yeah.
It's become this dynasty line, I guess. And he also has a line that Dolly Parton supposedly says.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he has a Dolly Parton quote.
Yeah, I forgot.
Is it the infamous, like, it takes a lot of money to look this cheap? Or
Yes, it is. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of money.
My roommate hates when drag queens say that line. She's like, nobody gives Dolly Parton the credit for saying it, and it's the most overused, like...
That's true. From Steel Magnolias.
Yeah.
It's not just a Dolly Parton line from her. It's from the movie Steel Magnolias. Mm-hmm. I love that movie. Okay. That's a great movie.
Yeah, no, okay. I know.
But yeah, I mean, after this is where the relationship really starts. I mean, it's a rough relationship. He's very homophobic, and Rusty's not interested, but the doctor, right? This doctor comes and visits, and then...
The Indian doctor.
Yes.
I was like... Is this normal? And I was like, no, I don't think so. I was like, maybe a social worker would come by, but like your doctor? No,
yeah, the doctor is quote unquote very worried for him because he hasn't been showing up for physical therapy.
She was a terrible actress.
Maybe she was an actual doctor. I don't know.
No, well, so I looked at her up because I was looking on the cast and I was like, who is this person? It turns out that she is credited for actually writing the first Indian cookbook.
What?
Oh.
In the United States.
Yeah, so Kester is a doctor.
And she's in like some exactly. cooking hall of fame.
Okay.
Now you should like look her up. She's
She is the
mother of Indian food in America.
Well,
apparently
good for her. That's
awesome. Brought Indian food to America in terms of cooking. Wow. And she's written like 52 cookbooks and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, that's a random achievement for a really bad actress.
Yeah, I was going to say, why is she in this film?
We'll have to curry up and contact her.
Curry in a hurry. Ha ha. I know. I'm like, what?
Oh, boy.
Sorry.
Give me samosa. Nope.
So, yeah, no. Back to this doctor thing. That is such bullshit. Like, no doctor in a New York hospital is just going to make house calls. Hey, I'm worried about you.
Or let him leave the hospital without an escort when he clearly just had a stroke. She's like, oh, you don't want an escort home? Like, they wouldn't just...
Yeah, she's like, oh,
some time has passed because it's, like, summertime, and then it's wintertime when he and Rusty start...
Yeah, I thought it was a little too abrupt.
Because he tries to... First, he has a physical therapist there. Right? I'm even going to forget, just like that character keeps asking him.
Oh, LaShawn.
LaShawn, yeah.
But then, De Niro tries to leave, but he slips, and then he goes back inside, and that's when.
Oh, to go to the voice teacher.
Yes.
She was a voice teacher.
Well, yeah, which it was not clear why he had that card.
Yeah.
And then, like, where he was going. And then it suddenly dawned on me that he was supposed to go out, and that's why he asked.
Yeah, and even the cab driver was like, don't
help.
You want this? And but then he, I guess, gets up the courage or brings himself
besides, to instead of going out, he's going to go in.
Yeah. And so he goes and knocks on Rusty's door, and Rusty kind of just shoos him away, but then. Decides to go after him and says that he needs the money. And we don't know at this point what he needs.
Yeah, he needs the money. And then, like, it's kind of soon where he's like, oh, I know your doctor. She helped my friends out, so.
Oh, who died of AIDS. Yeah. Right, and was asking for, like.
It was all too, like, this doctor is just helping drag queens, people with AIDS going to your, like. patients lower east side.
Maybe the hospital was across the street. That would make a lot more sense. Cooking Indian food chutney.
Yeah, she brings some nice meals.
Yeah,
it's a practice in like the upstairs of an Indian restaurant. Like, who knows? I mean, I don't know, but I it was just too coincidental, like, with the doctor.
And
just...
then she comes back for the party.
Yes.
As yeah. one would.
As one, yeah. To see how he's doing.
Also, that Rory guy. Is that his name, Rory? Well, who's the guy? Who's the guitar player?
Oh, yeah. Rory? No, it's Pogo.
Oh.
His real name is Rory.
Oh, okay. I knew that.
The pedophile Catholic schoolgirl dater. Like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
His character never goes, like,
high school. Whatever.
I guess the most important thing we get from him at one point, because it's kind of like a... who has the money, like, mystery during this movie, and so it keeps, the manager of this hotel apartments is telling Mr. Z, and I hate saying Mr. Z, and so that's, I guess, Pogo has this only, like, one important scene of they think that he stole the money because he has a new motorcycle, but it ends up that he's, you know,
a lot of people got pinned on the money, and it turns out it wasn't them.
Yeah, it's a whodunit, and it's a little bit. I mean, I think I kind of guessed it towards the end, but I think a big important thing is seeing this first lesson. And I love Rusty. And I'm just dawning now. He plays Rusty in one of my favorite film we've covered. He plays Dusty. Twister, and which is a great small funny role.
Helen Hunt.
Yes.
Where is she now?
Who knows?
What about you, Reunion?
What's that? Mad About You?
They're doing it with Will and Grace. You never know.
Yeah. Well, Gene Hank Azaria got divorced. That'd be a tough one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
but I love Rusty welcomes in and says welcome to Fairyland, and then I mean, we'll play the clip, but he just, like, quickly sings the scale for him. And, this is a moment where, if you haven't been sold on Philip Seymour Hoffman's performance yet, I think this is a big one. But
yeah, I mean, the way he kept in character, the entire time I was... And I loved, he had just sort of a very unique sort of... his carriage and demeanor was so funny, like, the way he held himself.
Yeah.
I also thought it was it was a very physical role for him because he's sort of like an awkward kind of.
Well, actually, yeah, we were listening to an interview with him.
Yeah, we've referenced this one before.
We love this because there's very few interviews with him. The NPR Fresh Take.
Yeah.
And he actually mentions the physical.
Yeah, that he's 5'10", 200 pounds at this point. You know, then he says in the interview that he's, you know, built like a wrestler. And so when he would look at himself, you know, the person interviewing him said, like, what did you think of yourself when you looked at yourself in the mirror? He's like, I just felt that I maybe wasn't going to do it right because I didn't feel...
Yeah, he said throughout the film that he just felt like he looked unpretty, but then he could, like, relate to that. That's what he said as his character.
Yeah.
I think a lot of, not especially at that time period, I feel like there's a lot of drag queens that have like body issues and sort of issues with their appearance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As like their real self, and so it's part of like the persona.
He said he watched three like video interviews with two drag queens and one transgender, and then transgendered was like the least flamboyant of the three, but that's just what he got, you know, like, saw, like, them having a difficult time, even though, like, post-surgery with the voice, and again, he references that, you know, says, I've got a very low voice, so he just tried, you know.
He was like,
I think it would be maybe more interesting if he had his low voice when he was not doing his performance on the stage, because I was like, he's still doing this weird, what I think a drag queen should sound like sometimes.
Well, does that make it a little bit more believable that his character does think that he's...
I guess that's...
Yeah, I don't know. But he kind of drops it when they're drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he's... Well, he's in the suit because his mother dies.
That is true.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's not something I'm too familiar with personally, so I was just curious again.
I think when you do drag, like... In your normal, everyday drag, I guess, you have your set of insecurities. But then when you do drag and become a woman, you have a whole new set of insecurities. I personally feel like, oh my god, am I pretty enough? Is my hair good enough? Is my makeup pretty enough?
Am I melting?
Am I melting?
That happens in the
heat. Am I melting? What are we...
Your makeup.
Oh, I see, I see.
Like in the summer.
Okay. But if you have a whole new set of insecurities as a woman.
On top of your
On
basic...
top of just...
Your own.
Yeah, so... It's
but I do
new...
feel like, especially now with like RuPaul's Drag Race and things like that, that there's definitely like a big separation between like the actual person versus their drag persona.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know. Maybe there wasn't as much in the 90s. I don't know.
Well, also, like, the character is transgendered, so it makes more sense for those two...
To be similar.
...things to be this gradient grace area of
gender. It's interesting, because actually, on RuPaul's Drag Race now, one of the leads is actually a transgender, male to female, and that's the first.
Yeah. Well, and that's also the case in... I mean, it's a hit show, and we were talking about, it, you know... TV shows and Orange is the New Black, the one character, I can't remember her name, but she's the hairdresser on the show in the prison.
Laverne Cox. Or even like Transparent. I mean, if this came out as a TV show now, it would like be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely more mainstream now than when this film came out.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many more like facets and like just, I mean, for...
But I think the average person, while they don't have like a full understanding, has a lot more of an understanding back then. Like, I remember older people talking when I was younger, and it's just like, oh, like every gay man wants to dress like a woman, and they're all drag queens.
Yeah, I mean, just so many more things are in the public eye just from, I mean, it was a big discussion in recent years of the, you know, mixed gendered bathrooms and just who can go into what, you know, whose bathroom, and it's just, I mean, it's much more in the public
eye. I am Kate.
Oh yeah, Caitlyn Jenner. It's a crate.
Oh yeah,
a lot of stuff's happening now.
Yeah,
like, but imagine like somebody your father's age in 1998 just stumbling into this
and watching this movie.
You
know? The $3 like matinee.
My father's generation. You know, I'm not like singling out your dad. You know, like,
I understand this.
My like, dad would have walked out.
My dad would have not. My father would not have watched. Will not. Would have not watched this.
Yeah.
My dad just can't watch it. He, like, falls asleep.
Okay.
Well, that's different.
He falls asleep during... You know what I'm saying, though? Yeah, it's just like we're... No.
Oh, of course.
We're so much... We're in, like, a different era now of that.
Yeah.
So I think, in a sense, while the film might not be perfect...
Flawless?
Yes, it might not be flawless. It still has to be considered somewhat groundbreaking just for coming out in that era.
Well, that's why I was surprised that I hadn't heard of it or seen it, because I feel like it is sort of, and it should be, like, because, you know, I feel like there's a whole list of movies that I could go through that I could say, like, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and Tu Wong Fu. There's all these movies that I feel like, you know, every gay man should have in their repertoire.
I think it gives a good glimpse of New York in the 90s, a totally different experience than what I had moving to New York in 2009. Mm-hmm. Like, he has a steel door to
in his bedroom.
So just, no case. So that's just,
And I was like, that's probably real.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I had one of those, like, fireman locks or whatever that you, like, put a pole up, and then there's, like, a little hook in the floor.
Yeah, he has it just in to, case. Like, just to his bedroom.
Yeah, yeah, that's crazy.
It's like almost like a panic room of sorts.
Yeah, that's what I called it, panic room.
And I guess the neighborhood, back to that, it's something he could definitely relate to going to, as he went to NYU, and when did he graduate? I'm not even sure, but he definitely saw...
In the late 80s.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely saw this.
The rougher side of New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was even rougher then. No, but it again, it's this great...
Pre-Giuliani.
It's this great New York film, I think, in terms of showing... Not that it's a great film, but showing that side of New York.
Yeah, there's, like, really... It's, like, there's really good moments.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like I said, it's...
Late 90s or 90s.
Yeah, like I said earlier, it's a very, like, it's melting pot. Like, it's just very... Yeah. Like, they even just... They have these little old ladies, like, in it, like... Doing
that was
whole,
another one. One of the ladies was, like, the queen of Yiddish theater in New York City.
Really?
Boy.
Wow, I love these
better
little...
research than us.
I know. I think I came so prepared. I just looked it up an hour ago. But I know. I was like, who's this random little, you know, Jewish woman with an accent?
Yeah, because
it turns out
she's
like a Polish Jewish woman who, like, yeah, she was like
a big stage,
a huge Yiddish theater, which is also like pretty cool because that doesn't exist anymore either, but it was a huge part of the
New York theater scene. Yeah, it almost seems like they got, like, the... Well, I mean, she plays a doctor, but they got, like, a big, you know, like, name in the Indian world for this Indian role, and then they got, I mean... Although
Jewish vaudeville star. Maybe he knew who she was.
Maybe, yeah.
Well, I mean, it kind of reminds me to his first... About, sorry, kind of reminds me of his first film, Triple Bogey, in terms of, like, these were, like, East Village filmmakers making a film.
Sure.
And while Joel Schumacher is a big Hollywood director at the time, he's almost kind of going into, like, the roots of East Village cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Which something that
yeah, it almost like it looks like it's a student film.
Yeah, it could be.
It ranges between the two, right? It ranges between.
It just seems like they kind of went with like the first draft of the screenplay. I
think yeah, like that's true. No editing. Yeah, just like
and you know what? You're probably right, Kyle. Because think about it: Joel Schumacher's producing, he's directing,
and he wrote it,
and he's writing it. No one's gonna tell him like what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, this sucks. Oh, wow.
So another scene that I really liked Rusty in is...
Yeah, let's definitely play this clip. This is his, like, first, because Walt goes away, and Rusty has to chase after him, and even I love this one line that he has, you see thorns on my head, you know, like, only rhinestones. But, you know, he convinces him to come back, and pretty much, I mean, we'll play the clip.
Yeah, let's play.
How long have you been doing this?
Singing?
Oh, this stay clean type of thing.
I've been in musicals at school ever since I was a little kid. You know, I was Prince Jalongkorn in The King and I. But I was miscast. Then I was the lion in The Wizard of Oz, but I was definitely miscast. But I was the only one that... you know, fat enough to fit into the costume, whatever. And then in The Snow Queen, where I was again totally miscast as the king, we were all on stage, and they had made these dry ice kettles so they could smoke come out of them, you know? And one night, all of a sudden, one dry ice kettle exploded, and dry ice flew everywhere, right? Well, Pretty Little Miss No Talent, who was playing The Snow Queen, you know, dashed off the stage screaming and pulling her hair out. Well, the play must go on, I believe. And she had dropped a crown. Well, honey, I just picked up that crown, put it on my head, and I was the greatest goddamn snow queen in the history of PS11 Paramus, New Jersey. And I've been wearing dresses ever since. But I don't like the term drag queen, you know, because most drag queens just want to, you know, parade around looking flawless, you know, and if they sing, you know, they, you know, lip sync to records. And I'm a singer, and I'm a female impressionist. I'm an artist, you know?
Well, it's just bullshit. Fucking drag queen.
Let me savor those lovely words for a moment. All right, what are you channeling, Jesse Helms?
So good. It's very good. I really like the mannerisms, and he's really committed. He does this thing where he's something like disturbs him, he's like,
yeah, on his brow.
On his, yeah, I his just love it.
Brow, yeah.
And he sort of does this weird, like, shaky hand thing where, like,
oh. It's so natural. It's,
Like, I think it's so believable. Like, I would not...
I feel like
you could meet a person like that and be like, yeah, that's real. Sure. That's, like, a person I would know.
Yeah, I mean, I love this scene for many reasons. I mean, just De Niro's face while listening, you know. And then, I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman's performance and just, I mean, the way he... delivers, it's just this really good, great call and answer between them, and the way he delivers, this line, the lines of the crown, and just, I love how terribly miscast, like, it's just, I mean, to me, I think just says, this is the first time we start, like, learning a little bit more, you know, like, just getting below the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, and also, I just love how he, like, breathes, he takes, like, these huge gulping breaths. To get out the next, like, cadence of his line. But I do notice that, like, he has, like, these sausage fingers. And they're all, like, covered in rings and nail polish. And I'm like, oh, my God. But it's great.
Well, it's something with his body, right? He knows how to use his body to his advantage when playing a character. He mentions, like, Scotty J earlier in Boogie Nights, and he's wearing, like, the really tight shirts, and he's just trying to look cool, but he's just not...
Awkward.
He plays so many great...
And this, he's just using his body to an advantage, where some people might see it as a disadvantage, and just in terms of the way he looks, but it's just, like you said, like the fingers and the hands. And,
yeah, it's so good.
And at the same time, I think he's trying to, like, hold back a little bit, like, the character for, like, Walt's sake. You know, I mean, because, again, like I said...
To not completely flame out.
I'm sure he's being demure.
Right. Like, this is his toned-down version.
Yeah. And we get the use of the title of this film, of Flawless.
There you go.
Yes, of course. But
yeah, so again, and you mentioned there's also, like, a Miss Flawless pageant with his friends, and spoiler alert, Cha-Cha wins for the third time in a row.
Which Cha-Cha calls him... Mr. My Left Foot, right?
Yeah,
Walt,
after
Mr. My Left Foot,
the Daniel Day-Lewis film, My Left Foot.
Because he's like, you gotta watch this.
Yeah. And then he tells him to watch The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah.
Like... Oh, so funny.
That was really funny.
I like Cha-Cha.
I think, like, probably this was, not as challenging, a different way for Philip to hold the character physically, the way that Robert probably had to hold his character physically. Because, I mean, I feel like if you watch his other movies, this is not natural to him.
No, of course. They're playing almost the very tough characters to play, but on the opposite spectrums of... I don't want to just say loud and quiet, but you know what I mean. It's just very... He has to be because of having the stroke, and then Philip Seymour Hoffman is just playing a very colorful, like, cheerful, vibrant character. And, I mean... going back to that line of him saying, and we use in the opening of our film, like, I'm an artist. I mean, how do you two feel about, like, him, I mean, saying that, and have you met people that really, like, try to, you know, bring it to a different, like, the pageantry and just, like, the craft, the love?
I've met and worked with a drag queen who is transgender and plays the guitar and is a reverend.
Oh.
And sings and plays the guitar as in drag, but also identifies as a transgender woman. And I think that, it's not always cut and dry for everybody.
I don't think what drag queen meant in the 80s and 90s is what drag queen means now, at least within the gay community. Like, I feel like RuPaul's Drag Race has mainstreamed it in so many ways, but I feel like it's more than just what you wear. It's like the performance and the character and the audience capturing. I feel like there's a lot more to it, whereas, like, I think in the earlier days, I feel like it was more pageantry and about looking and exuding a certain persona, but you didn't necessarily have to possess all the other qualities to be a good drag queen. But now I feel like the expectation is pretty high for drag queens.
Oh, yeah. Especially,
like,
in New York.
You can't just cut it by the way you look. And you can't be, like, a club kid who just shows up looking, like, really cool and amazing and become a personality. Like, who's in it? Joey Arias.
Yeah.
Is in this movie, and he's, like, a huge, like, figure, an icon, but more, like, in the club scene.
The drag queen that gets its her wig snatched off of her.
I was gonna guess it's the one that's, like, in charge of the pet.
That's Jackie Beat.
That's okay. Jackie Beat, and she's still...
She's great.
Now, Jackie Beat is successful because she has a look, but she also has the personality, and she's known as, like, the bitchy mean, like, she roasts everybody, and she's actually on tour now in the United States. I think she's, in the West Coast right now.
Well, we've seen there was a period we went to, like, a decent amount of burlesques, right? And do you remember off the top of your head what... I know there was the one in, like, the East... Village.
Slipper Room?
Yeah, we went to Slipper Room. And there was one host that I thought was phenomenal, and I can't remember her name.
It was a drag queen?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. That was years ago.
Yeah, and she says, drop the bitch and make the switch. That's a good line.
I don't know, but have you ever seen Paris is Burning? It's a documentary.
No.
Yeah. It's a 90s documentary.
About, like, the New York in the 80s.
Is that the ballroom?
It's the Harlem Ball
Circuit. Yeah, I have seen that. I saw that one in college.
Paris is
Yeah, it's very common to show it in college and, like, queer studies or gender studies or lots or documentary filmmaking. I mean, it sort of, like, broke a lot of barriers, but it shows the type of drag, especially in, like, the Black community and everything.
Oh, okay.
Or the poor community, I guess, at the time. And it's all about, like, pageants and voguing and how voguing came to be and all that
voguing,
kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But it more was, like, a pageant and a show than it was, like... Like, I think that actually Rusty's probably more contemporary, being more of a stage performer.
I think people think it's, like, this thing, this... that's always stays, but it's like a journey of expression and artistry, and with gender it's a journey, it changes over time. So maybe she was a drag queen for a long time and was like, oh, I really feel this way, or maybe she's going through this abusive relationship and thinks she needs to appease her lover, but it's this thing that keeps changing and evolving versus like a cut and dry.
Yeah, it's pretty fluid.
Yeah,
and I feel like the drag queens that like we know of and like are popular now have evolved also.
Okay.
Like since their beginning, and now they're like more of like a mainstay, kind of like a household name for us. You've probably never heard of them.
Do most of the drag queens that you know, because we kind of see like they keep like Rusty and his, let's just call it Rusty's crew, like Rusty
Entourage.
Like they keep their, they, you know, when they go and they get pizza to see Carmine because right. It's big arms and stuff like that. They keep, I mean, their, you know, personas, and there's just their, you know, they never change their personalities, but their, you know, their dress. Like, would you say like a lot of the drag queens you know, do they go dress up for at night, or do they, I mean, do you go out during
the day? Were talking about this, like, in even in the movie Tu Wong Fu, with
Wesley Snipes.
With Wesley Snipes.
Oh, Patrick Swayze. Patrick Swayze and John Leguizamo.
They, they're, quote, they're drag queens,
but they're always drag queens.
But they're never out of drag, so are they actual drag queens?
Right, because the whole thing is that drag is sort of like a persona, an expression that they take on when they're, like, on stage or going out. But I think part of it is that they create an illusion, and it's the switch from the boy to the drag queen,
right,
or the man to the drag
queen.
Well,
like, for you, you know, you're married, you have a kid, you work in a school, and then you do drag. It's a very separate performance-based life.
And that's why most people are like, wow, I didn't even realize that was you, until I'm like, oh.
And then other people shave their eyebrows, have no body hair, more...
Or get implants.
Like, gender outlaw.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdo.
Yeah, I think there's a range, but I think for like, in my head, like a drag queen is someone who it's about the illusion that they like they the before and after, like they go from like Philip Seymour Hoffman to Rusty, or something like.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a duality.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's the illusion.
That's right. It's the illusion, and I think a lot of it is like, you'll like YouTube like drag makeup tutorials, and it's like the reveal, like to see them go from like
the
boy with the beard to like a woman, and of course they speed it up and they put it to music so it looks like it's easy.
I guess I was actually curious about that. How long does it take you two to, I guess, beautify and get
us? 5 minutes, just some chapstick and mascara.
That's right, we're good to go. Vaseline on your knuckles.
When we first started, it took us days.
Yeah, because we would like
days.
Well,
not
we
days,
would
but
fuck it up a lot because we're not trained. We're not classically trained in the art of drag.
We're orphan sisters helping each other out.
That's right. And YouTube is hard to translate onto your face.
Yeah. It would take us about maybe 4 to 6 hours in the very beginning.
Oh yeah, because we would like mess up so much.
But now I think in less than 2 hours we're beat.
Yeah, probably an hour and a half to 2 hours, and it's not flawless by any means. I'll just use that word now forever.
We look good in a dimly lit bar with drunk adults.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I would feel much more intimidated working, like, doing drag in a place that's known to have drag queens.
For Goldie and I, we do drag for charity, so we do a lot of I guess, family events or
like
restaurants.
People who are, don't necessarily attend drag-related
events. We're not in a gay bar doing drag shows for gay men.
Yeah.
Right.
And they can be very harsh. And
you're the gateway to the...
We're the gateway drug.
That's right. That's us. And we're safe. We're organic. We come from the earth.
PG-13.
That's good. I mean, that's...
Yeah, and I feel like that's... For me, it's like I'm as comfortable doing that because it becomes... It can be very competitive, and it can get very... It can be consuming. Like, the drag queens that are really, really pop... Like, really successful, it's their full-time job.
I mean, to shave your eyebrows off, you got to be serious.
Yeah. My performance, I shaved my armpits. That was it. I wore pants.
Even that is...
Yeah,
I mean, sometimes I'll...
I've never shaved my armpits before.
No, sometimes I'll pick an outfit just so I don't have to shave anything.
Girl.
Yeah.
It's hard being a woman.
It is. In the... You know, and that, yeah, Harry Mary over
she's
there.
She's Harry. I look like I have a pet rabbit in my bathroom before I do a show.
That's right.
Chinchilla.
Oh my God. Labrador.
That's hilarious.
Labrador. Chocolate lab.
There is one other scene.
Yeah, definitely. There's so many great
this
scenes.
This is our first, again, I said it before, this is our first film where we get, like, a lot of scenes.
Yeah.
I can't believe that this is your first podcast where he's, like,
the star.
A lead character.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's really...
And how many movies have you reviewed before this?
Well, we're doing this. This is going to be the 22nd, 23rd episode. It's going to be a little over 20 because we had the random episodes.
Took him a while. And it's not like he goes from this and just starts.
He's an actor that paid his dues. But this was... This also, again, like Twister and Boogie Nights was one that a lot the public and the film community, fellow actors, filmmakers really recognize him from. But this is also, again, like, definitely because he's just featured so much.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
and gives such a... It's not just...
Usually we're, like, skimming through
the
film.
It's not a bland performance by any means.
Yeah, to figure out. Or, like, oh, this is his third scene.
Yeah.
So I'll be like, oh, this is his last scene. But no, I mean, like, there's so many to choose from.
Yeah, I mean, after we just covered Montana, that was the one in the beginning of the second act where he just plays... You know, tries to do something with the role, but he plays a bland mob accountant, and then he's got three scenes in Next Stop Wonderland.
Yeah, I mean, this is like his real...
He's pretty brave to be... He became such a huge actor for having so many queer roles.
Yeah.
At the beginning of his career. Like, it's pretty brave to be a new actor on the scene playing a drag queen who's, oh, I want to be a woman... And then goes to Boogie Nights. Boogie Nights after this movie?
No, Boogie Nights was before. Boogie Nights was
actually,
1997.
Kyle, I have to correct. He's the star of Happiness.
Oh, yes.
But
that's a much more ensemble movie, too.
Yeah, but that's so much more of an ensemble. Like, yeah. So I don't know. Like, he's technically one of the leads.
It's surprising that Boogie Nights is before this. Just because the film quality is so poor and Boogie Nights feels so...
Well, that just goes to say P.T. Anderson versus Joel Schumacher.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, he has a supporting role in a bigger movie and then he has a bigger part in a smaller movie.
Boogie Nights is so slick.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's one of the best.
But Happiness is an ensemble just like Boogie Nights. He's more of like a part of that ensemble.
Happiness is a great film.
this is a very different role.
Yeah.
And it's like right before this. This is more, he's like one of the two stars. We're not bouncing around.
Yes.
I guess De Niro like trumps him slightly in this, but...
Sure.
It's,
I mean, just because he's Robert De Niro, but he's the largest speaking role in this movie, and...
So we kind of alluded to it earlier. I actually like...
Yeah, definitely want to get to one more scene.
Yeah, I actually like this scene. So his mother dies.
Yeah, and Walt finds Rusty... drunk in the stairwell, and he's
in a suit.
Like,
yeah, this is his most... I mean, I guess his least drag, for lack of a better word, outfit, because he's just in a suit.
Yeah. So we'll play this clip.
Hi.
Are you all right?
Peachy, honey.
Where have you been?
Fun and games. My mother's funeral and wake.
Probably hear about your mother.
Oh, my father killed her a long time ago. Buried her today. That's all. This is my legacy. Her old gloves. She always wore gloves. And she was a victim, you know. She's sweet, you know, but a victim. She's a reformed drunk.
on her knees at church begging, you know, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, and every goddamn saint in heaven to forgive her for giving birth to, you know, Cruella de Vil, you know, being a slave to my father before he died. You would have loved each other. He thought Archie Bunker was a flaming liberal. You know, every morning she would get up and fix him breakfast, you know? And every morning for 30 years she said, oh, hi, Daddy, do you love me? No answer. Every morning, 30 years, hi, Daddy, do you love me? No answer. One day my mom says, hi, Daddy, do you love me? And he said, no. You know, the moral of that story is, so if you haven't gotten an answer in 30 years, you know, you ought to know it by now.
You know, we just watched a movie today, and I just got all of that.
Me too. I was just saying that, like, I didn't get all of that the first time.
Okay. I didn't realize that it was... First of all, I didn't realize it was his mother's funeral, and that...
I didn't realize it was his mother's funeral. I didn't realize it was her gloves that he was picking up off the ground.
Would you say, like, sometimes his performance, the voice, it's a little hard to understand?
It's a little hard to understand, and it's definitely hard to understand De Niro sometimes.
Yeah, you definitely have to be at the edge of your seat listening to what
they're saying. He was, like...
He's drunk. And
he's drunk, and he's keeping that character, which is already kind of a muddled.
Yeah, just because he's got that low voice too.
Yeah. So.
And then did he say that my mother died a long time ago, but now I'm just burying
her? Father killed her a long time ago.
Like, so it's just like he killed her soul.
Metaphorically.
Crushed her soul, her spirit.
Right.
You know, this whole line of...
And then I thought, also, do you love me, Daddy? I thought he was talking about himself when he was little, and now I just realize he's talking about the mom.
Because it's a little weird that the mom was calling him Daddy.
No, I feel like that's a term of endearment. My mom used to call her... My mom's mom used to call my mother Mom. Like, Mommy.
My grandparents call each other, like, Mommy and Daddy. I think it's a little weird.
Maybe it's a generational
thing. Yeah, I mean...
But now I got it... Now everything... change. That scene is very different to me now than it was an hour ago.
It's a very
couple
sad
hours ago.
Scene.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, there's this that his mom was an alcoholic, his dad was, you know, to quote the quote, thought Archie Bunker was a flaming liberal, and Archie
Bunker's...
That's
so funny.
Yeah. That's an amazing line.
Yes. And...
So did my dad.
But it's just very... It's haunting in a way, just because, like, all he gets from it is these gloves.
His legacy.
That's the legacy.
Which is funny only because it's like, that she always wore gloves. It's like such a drag thing to do.
Right. Well, look at us. Our mothers were drag queens,
pretty much.
So.
It happens.
The only thing I wish about that scene is basically the only scene Philip Seymour Hoffman is in drag is this scene. Because he's literally dressed up as a man. So this is probably the most drag he's ever been in. And it would have been interesting to kind of like play off like, look at me, I'm in drag for the first time in my life or something like that. Or having him put on the gloves while talking about it would have been a little more interesting.
Yeah, like if they didn't make it so... Like it wasn't so shocking for him to be in a suit and not having makeup on. And I was like, I would have wanted more reaction about that from De Niro. Like... I've never seen you like this before.
Yeah, well, after this clip, I mean, the scene continues, and Rusty really opens up, and he says, like, I'm lonely, I'm ugly, I'm a drag queen. Like, he's given up on this, like, or at least in this drunken state that he's an artist, that, you know, and he's just, I mean, again, these are two very lonely characters, and this is the most they've opened up to one another.
RuPaul has a really good line opener to one of his books, and it says, you're born naked and everything you put on after that is drag. And so it's a good line.
Yeah, I like that. It's a great line.
And it's sort of like just him wearing the suit to sort of like pass at his mother's funeral or whatever is a form of drag in a way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's an interesting take.
We all wear our costumes. Play our characters.
Right, and definitely there's like a tug of war there with De Niro too, because he has all these like medals and.
Oh yeah, he's supposed to be playing, but we see him open up. And
he's
then,
adorned, yeah, in his own way, but. In the opposite way.
Yeah, I mean, with that one, I mean, there's a scene with his friend Tommy, one of these guards that he saved, and...
And he doesn't see himself as a hero.
No, and, yeah, exactly, he doesn't see himself as a hero, and he doesn't want LaShawn to hear about his, you know, like, awards and stuff like that, but then Tommy is very... I mean, people seem, like, almost, there's this point of that we just have to accept that they're accepting at this point, you know what I'm saying? There's almost, like, this jump in, beliefs.
Oh, is this a scene where he talks about his best friend goes missing?
That's
or something he never
little,
told anybody.
That's a little later on.
Yeah,
that was an interesting scene too.
So that's something I definitely wanted to touch on. We'll just like touch on some stuff here. So yeah, it's these three guys, and they keep showing the picture. And you mentioned the first guy's
There's
name.
There's Tommy and
there.
Joey, and Walt is De Niro,
which is the one that goes to Asia.
Yeah, goes to Thailand because he ended up using.
Yeah,
Walt.
He used Walt, again, just to go to the airport, but Walt is, like, that's part of the reason Walt doesn't see himself as a hero, is because his best friend essentially, like, screwed him.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he really screwed the bank that they were security guards at.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I thought that was an interesting element there. It's one of, like, the side...
Yeah,
yeah, and they had like this sort of revealing moment, like, I'm going to share something that I never told anybody.
Yeah, he supposedly never told anybody, and then Rusty... We find out that Rusty is the one that has
Mr. Z's
money.
Right, and that's where it all comes back together, and I'm like,
Yeah. Exactly. And then Walt feels that Rusty was using him.
But. Which is a reoccurring theme in De Niro's character, is he thinks the prostitute, or the, is obviously paid off to come and visit him when he's sick. He's really suspicious about everyone around him.
He's paranoid.
He can't just take a gift or
a compliment.
He thinks everyone's using him for something.
Yeah, that was... Because we mentioned it before. Originally, he's in love with that one prostitute, even though he doesn't think she's a prostitute. And then eventually...
Yeah, he says she's a lady and then the one...
He doesn't see her as a prostitute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they're trying to do some sort of comparison between the drag queens and the prostitutes also... That, like, your perception of, or people's perception of you.
Yeah, no, they're definitely trying to draw lines between these two characters the entire time. And some of them really land, and some of them are a little bit murky. You know, then I don't know if he winds up with Mimi, but it turns out to be more of a real thing.
Again, yeah, I mean, they go and then they...
Mimi.
But, yeah, I mean, they go, he goes and they have their, he dances with her, and then they... sleep together, but then that's when he's returning. I mean, we're getting to the end of the film, and Walt returns back, and the weird character of Leonard warns him. He's like, keep quiet. And at this point, Walt and Rusty had their falling out because he found that Rusty had the money.
Right, and if you hear anything, ignore it.
Ignore it, and he's like, I don't give a shit about what happens in this crap hole of an apartment or whatever. Right. But then when Walt hears Rusty getting attacked by Mr. Z and his two thugs, he goes up there with his gun.
How do they find out he has the money? Oh, because they find, like, Rita's mail. And
yeah,
like,
Leonard reads Rusty's mail.
Yeah, he steamed it.
He steamed, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was like,
and
this
sees the medical bills that he's...
That's like 25,000.
1,000 plus 25,000 for something else. And I was like, this one knows what he's doing with the steam.
Sneaky Leonard.
You've never done that before?
Nope.
Well, now it's emails. Now you just have to
steam those emails.
Yeah. So basically,
Rusty returns back from the flawless pageant where Cha Cha has won for the third time in a row, and Mr. Z and the two thugs are there. But then when Walt hears that, he goes upstairs with the gun, shoots like the one thug, but he gets shot at the same time, and then Rusty battles out and then goes into the hallway.
Yeah, this is like an action scene.
It becomes almost like the end scene to like Montana, to what's the other, The Getaway, the, just to name a few other.
Wasn't the best action here?
No.
No.
This was not, yeah, this wasn't Joel Schumacher.
It was rough. Very drawn out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it should have just ended in a much more, like...
succinct way.
Yeah, just that, like, I mean, it could have been good that, maybe, like, I honestly, because there's that whole story that Tommy tells, you know, the security buddy of Walt, that Walt played, like, unconscious during that crime and was able to shoot the two guys. I just thought that that's how it was going to play out again. And that Rusty was going to, like, again, hit one of them with something, be able to move away, and then Walt, you know, pops them from
That would have been easier.
It's a big fight scene.
It becomes a big fight scene.
What the hell?
It becomes like, yeah, like a bad version of, like, Taxi Driver at the end. Then he goes into the hallway, and then Rusty ends up killing the one guy with the heel of his shoe.
Yeah, right between the eyes.
Right between the eyes. Is there any heel?
Yeah.
Is there any stiletto that's...
I mean, it'd have to be pretty sharp, and you'd have to be pretty swift.
It just seems like something from, like, a...
5'11", 220-pound drag queen is not wearing stiletto heels.
Yeah, in general.
Back from the Flawless pageant.
Yeah.
She is wearing wedges or
but I did
changed
like,
her shoes.
Yeah.
The final Mr. Z gets the gunshot through the
neck.
Bottom of the neck, chin,
through the
mouth,
skull.
Through the skull.
In out one, in one way, out the other.
Yeah.
I like when Rusty's on the fire escape and is like, okay, she's like, Grace Kelly... rearview window.
Yeah. Like, oh, I actually love like that. Like when he would mention.
Yeah, even in this dramatic scene, there's like these like. Yeah.
He would mention the actress and then like the movie.
Yeah.
And then
the inspiration.
Yeah, that like those elements of the fight.
That
scene
was very
stuff.
Funny.
Yeah. But
there was one he mentioned. I was like, oh, okay.
That fight was definitely.
But then it's like the flower pot on the guy's head. It's like the slapstick, like very.
And then Mr. Z's like, I know it's a steel door, but it's that whole like banging into doors, just on the walls on the floor, like in behind. That's where like, you know, that was a total setup earlier why he has a steel door. I mean, again, like I get that from like he was that character's nervous and that times someone breaking into like his apartment, but that was totally like
much.
A setup earlier for this like. What will delay that? And again, I would have just written that as like a much shorter, like 1 minute scene of him on the ground. And,
yeah, I didn't really care about that scene
exactly.
At all. I was like, okay.
Yeah, we already had that. Like, Walt shows up to help, you know, to save Rusty again.
We
and
get
then,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, the one I was going to mention that I was like, oh, okay, was he was like Linda Hamilton, Terminator 2.
Yeah. Yeah, that just seemed a little like, I mean, it's a very strong female character, but it was like a little too. At that point,
like
Linda
Hamilton,
I think,
Hamilton,
that, I think
Grace
that's
Kelly.
Only like a 7 year reference.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been.
Yeah,
it's not enough.
It's not a Grace Kelly rear view.
No,
rear window.
It's kind of weird. And then okay, so they bring out De Niro in the ambulance.
Yeah, and as we said earlier,
yeah, it ends with like they won't let Philip Zimmer off and.
Well, I love that. Again, it's a
Rusty.
Rusty's entourage is there to get their time on camera.
Oh yeah, that's kind of funny.
Yeah, that was hysterical.
Yeah.
That's what would happen.
Yeah, that would be real.
It's like, it's your time.
The ones in the,
yeah, each
the,
one of them is like on a different
moment.
News station as like an eyewitness.
Yeah.
But then they roll De Niro into the ambulance. And
Rusty joins along saying that he's going to be, you know, that he is, you know, they say family only. He says that I'm his sister.
Of course he says he's
my sister.
Yeah, and
then De Niro says, yeah, he's my sister.
Yeah.
And then
he just flashes some cash and be like, take me to the best hospital.
Yeah, and he's Nurse Ratched. That's his last little pop culture reference.
I thought that was so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the film. Anything else you want to add, Kyle? Or?
I mean, what in the end, did you two find this an entertaining movie? Or is
it was entertaining.
I'm so glad that I saw it, and I feel like I need to watch it again.
I feel like I want to watch it again now after doing this.
Yeah, because I feel like I missed a whole bunch of things.
Do you think is it fair to say that it's a film you think you'll recommend to?
I think I would recommend it in the sense that it could be like sort of like a culty campy film.
Yeah.
With the asterisks of watch it for the performances.
Yes.
Like give the forewarning of.
Yeah.
It's a time capsule.
Yeah.
Okay. I like
for
that.
For sure.
Like there are movies that I like that I could watch over and over again, but it's not because they're the best films. It's just because they capture a sort of moment.
This
and
is
then also there's a performance.
Yeah. This is a great movie to see Philip in and study his acting in it.
Yeah.
For sure.
And Robert De Niro.
Sure. I mean, yeah, as far as like later, I mean, this movie is already almost 20 years old, but it's definitely one of his like later really decent performances.
I think my biggest surprise is that he really didn't have any feature roles prior to this.
Yeah, I mean, this is at the cusp of when he really starts getting some, you know, like leading roles. He's had some decent screen time, but it was always like via ensemble or just strong, like a great character in one or two scenes. But this.
So in that case, I feel like I appreciate it so much more, because I feel like if this was going to be, like, first of all, to lead, you know, to co-star with Robert De Niro must have been a huge deal for him.
Mm-hmm. Daunting, yeah.
Yeah. And then on top of that, to play such a...
an out-there character.
Out-there character.
I think he was just chomping at the bit.
He was just
again,
like, I'll
as
take...
a, he's...
But it seemed to suit him.
Oh, it seemed so natural.
Yeah. Now, has he ever done anything else where he's in drag?
I don't think so. We'll have to see, because, again, a lot of
this type of drag
we haven't seen.
Not that.
No, no, definitely not to this level.
Yeah. Not off the top of my head.
We'll have to keep an eye out.
He plays some, like, flamboyant characters, but not by no means.
Yeah, like over the top, but nothing drag. No. You know? I don't think so, at least. I guess we'll see, though.
If there is, Hoff fans, call us out on it.
Yes, please let us know. I guess, I mean, that's flawless.
Yeah, that is flawless. Flawless is not flawless.
Or not.
No.
Right.
No, yeah,
or not.
Or not.
I woke up like this.
Yeah. It's basically the type of drag that we do. Unflawless.
Oh. A spinoff. We can make this.
That's
make
right.
This movie.
It can happen. With a hyphen.
So, thank you so much for coming on. Just for our audience, where can they find you?
Well, Goldie is on Tinder, Grindr, Plenty of Fish, Farmers Only.
Speak for yourself, Ona.
We do our monthly show in Inwood, Manhattan.
At Indian Road Cafe.
Yes.
Right. And then last Thursday of every month at 8 o'clock, always for a different charity.
Yeah, that's the great thing. We've kind of been alluding to it.
But
yeah,
that's
so we always pick out a local charity. We're actually, I just booked next... December's charity, because since it's only monthly, people sort of like have lined up.
Wow,
and
that's
we just
awesome.
Booked our
pretty
like
backed up till Christmas.
Yeah,
well, that's,
the
that's
new year.
Great.
It's pretty cool for 3 years of doing this. We always raise like a couple $1,000.
That's great. Are there any specific charities you'd like to do a shout out to get people, I mean, besides coming out to your shows, that you'd like people to be aware of?
Well, okay, so we're doing the Dyckman Farmhouse Museum, which is also a
we
local
did the Inwood Film Festival. I don't know if you guys are involved with them at all.
Yeah, I mean, we
know of them. So we are doing Inwood Art Works, which is now the organization that Inwood Film Festival falls under.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
And so we're doing supporting them. We did Northern Manhattan Arts and Culture, that was recently. What else is coming up? The Children's Brain Tumor Foundation is the one we just did a couple weeks ago,
right.
which is not like super local, but still a local resident of. Works for them, and then we have like a there's a kids camp for children with disabilities, that's the one in December called Spark Kids,
that's
coming up.
I mean, that's great that you've done
yeah
so
you're doing
much.
Something fun and it's for a good, you know,
I know we should probably count how much money we've made.
That was my next question.
We raise around almost $1,000.
Yeah, between $800 and $1,000 every month. We were doing it for 3 years. There was a lull for a little while, but I feel like since September we've really picked up a lot of steam, and we're pretty much like sold out every month.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
standing room only.
That's part of the reason why I haven't been in a couple months.
Yeah, you got to show up early.
Get reservations, girl.
You have to get there early.
You
yeah.
do.
Yeah,
it's like that in pub trivia. Who knew? Speaking of
headliners on 218 Street.
That's right. Just talk about
this
opposites.
Is what you get.
That's right. Pacino and Hoffman. Or not
De Niro?
De Niro.
You can be De Niro.
Oh my god, I just talk a slip. That was an Italian Freudian slip.
So is there a place where
so you
can follow you?
Yeah, so you can find us on Instagram. I'm Lox, LOX, the number 4, Love, LUV.
I'm Ona.Louise.
And
follow us.
Yeah, we're also on Facebook. Indian Drag Bingo at India Road Cafe is on Facebook. You can email us too at ircdragbingo@gmail.com. And we're always looking for new charities, so
great.
Bring them our way.
Awesome. Perfect.
Wonderful.
Once again, thanks for coming on. I hope you enjoyed Flawless, or at least enjoyed speaking with us.
This is amazing. We're crossing media.
That's right.
Boundaries with this podcast.
We're podcasting now. We're pod queens.
Never looked better.
Pod queens. There you go.
I was like, do drag queens do podcasts? How would you know?
Well, RuPaul has a podcast.
I know, but they already know who RuPaul is.
Oh, well.
You could do at least, it's not, I mean, some people do bi-weekly, monthly podcasts. If you do a monthly show there, you should maybe think about doing your own monthly like podcast.
That would be great. We wouldn't have to do makeup. Nobody would know.
Don't tell the viewers.
The illusion.
We are in full face right
We're
now.
We're always flawless.
On that note, what do we have next week, Kyle?
We have our third collaboration between PTA and PSH, Magnolia.
Yeah, really excited about that one next week. We got a great guest, Tim O'Connor. He's a filmmaker. Honestly, one of the biggest P.T. Anderson fans I know.
Yeah, I've never met Tim before, but looking forward to hearing his thoughts on PTA and PSH.
So, thanks for listening, guys. Make sure to like, subscribe, share, do all those things. Please comment. We love your comments.
Comment. Yeah, we're getting a good following going. Hoff fans, we thank you very much. And Ona, Goldie, we have now been ending the show with reminding the Hoff fans to stay uncool. It's a line from Almost Famous, and we'd love for you to say that for our audience right now.
Ready, Ona? At the count
of
three.
Yeah, everyone out there.
1, 2, 3.
Stay uncool.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Where did you come from, baby? How did you know I needed you? How did you know I needed you so badly? How did you know I'd give my heart gladly? Yesterday, I was one of the lonely people. Now you're lying close to me, making love to me. Sex a thing, you. I believe in miracles.